Hi everyone, this is Wendy and welcome back to Overexposed, a podcast profiling ordinary people doing extraordinary things made by and for ambitious creatives. If you love photography and YouTube, chances are you will be just as stoked as me for this episode. You know our guests today from their moody, dynamic photos and tutorials that don't waste your time. Our guests today are, you've guessed it, none other than Rachel and Daniel from Mango Street. Within the first year of their YouTube journey, Mango Street amassed over 500,000 subscribers, covering topics like 3 tips for better portrait locations and how to pose friends who are not models. One of the most important things I've learned throughout talking to Rachel and Daniel on this episode is the power of being intentional with what you're doing and how that contributed to the overall success of Mango Street. Currently, they have over 1 million subscribers. We also go over how they manage their creative partnership and branching off into their own interests with the recent launch of their personal YouTube channels. We are so lucky to have their time to chat with us, and you guys are in for a real treat with this one. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rachel and Daniel.
Thanks for having us. We're glad to be here.
I'm personally a huge fan. When you guys started in 2017, I was also just starting photography at the time. So it's been awesome to kind of see you guys grow over the years.
We appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, it's been like a long 3 years in some ways. In other ways, it's been really kind of fast moving and nonstop.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
So everyone knows you guys as Mango Street as the YouTube channel, but I think Mango Street's not only just a channel, but also a brand. So personally, when I think of your photos, I think of photos that are dynamic, well-lit, and very meticulously executed in terms of the details and everything. But you guys both weren't photographers when you first started working together. Where did each of your creative backgrounds come from?
Well, when we met, when we first started dating, Rachel was into photography and I was not. I was more into music. I worked at recording studios, played in bands, and I did a photography class in high school, but that was about the extent of it. You know, like nothing I pursued. And so then she was taking photography more seriously when we started dating. And that's when she showed me how to use her 5D Mark II. And she just started teaching me.
Yeah. And I dragged him along I was a wedding photographer from 2013 up until last year's wedding. And yeah, I dragged him with me to every wedding, and he also has a background in video. And so he kind of already has all the skills for, you know, composition.
Yeah. I was always doing videos. Like my band had to do like these, it was kind of vlogs back in the day before people were really doing many vlogs, but this is part of this program. We're doing like vlogs. So I was doing video editing for that. And I'd do like some graphic design stuff with my rudimentary Photoshop skills. And so like, I kind of was like in that realm, just not really with a camera in my hand. And Rachel kind of showed me how to use shoot in manual mode.
Shoved a camera in your hand.
Yeah. And then she's like, hey, come with me to go shoot this wedding. I was like, all right, I guess this is what we're doing now. So, but Rachel, you've been shooting since high school, I think, right?
Yeah, I've been interested in it for a long time. I would shoot with friends in high school, and then I got more into it professionally in like 2012, 2013.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Rachel, you started first, but then in terms of photography, but then Daniel, you also had these adjacent skills. Did that make it easier when you guys first started working together?
Yeah, like I was a little bit more of like a tech, not super techie, but I enjoy kind of like some of the tech side of things. And Rachel's are super creative. So I think that we kind of complemented each other in that way.
He's a jack of all trades and he can like figure anything out. So if I need something, like I'm like, okay, I want this to happen, then he can figure out how to make it happen.
Yeah. And so early on in the early days, I was working as a video editor, and then I'd go on production shoots, and you know, I would just start asking the videographer I was working with. I was just like an assistant, just like kind of helping out. And I just started asking him questions. Why are you doing that? And so I just kind of started picking up stuff from the video side while working mostly in post-production. Luckily, the DSLRs were shooting really good video, so we started dabbling in video a little bit. But that was back when we weren't really sure what shutter speed did. We just do like one over 4,000th of a second with our video. And it was, I don't know, we didn't really shooting at f1.2. So, you know, it's come a long way since then, but that's kind of how we started.
I think that's the best way to do it, to kind of dive in, especially people who go to school. Like, yeah, they might learn like, oh, F8 means this, or like ISO means this, but it's all theory until you kind of just do it.
There's nothing replaces practicing. And actually just, we used to just bring a camera with us everywhere, like just to shoot photos of each other, just to like get the hang of things. And that's how everyone should start, I think.
Yeah.
So in one of your recent videos, not that it's clickbaity, but when I saw the title, it was like, oh my God, I need to watch this. I need to see why my photos might suck. But I think one of the cool things that you guys mentioned there is the importance of drawing inspiration from different mediums rather than just photography itself. For you guys, where do you draw most of your inspiration for your work nowadays?
Daniel's looking at me. I think that it's always kind of been the same, in that it's always just different things that inspire us, like certain movies, certain directors, certain like music is really inspirational for at least me, even some books, just anything that sort of sparks, you know, a little bit of creativity and then like gives me a place to run from, like that's what I'm always looking for.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed the more we've gotten into photography and filmmaking is that when we watch shows or watch movies, we're always like paying attention to the composition, how things are lit, and just all these aspects, like what makes it look so good, and then seeing how that can be applied to photography. You know, we do draw inspiration from directors like Wes Anderson, like that's an obvious one. Any other medium? Otherwise, if you just look at photographers, it just becomes like a circle of people just like kind of getting inspired from each other and just kind of replicating, and then just kind of starts to look the same.
That's what I was going to say, is that like if you want to be a leader in your craft, like in photography in particular, you have to look outside of photography, because all anybody's doing is just copying each other. And so if you want to be a trendsetter, you have to like look outside for the new trends.
Yeah. It's kind of like with music, like all my favorite bands, like I think I hate all my favorite bands. Just like it's just completely different than what I would normally listen to. But you probably don't want all of your favorite artists just looking to each other for like inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's like so easy with the internet now, that like algorithms try taking over, and they're literally designed to show you what you liked like maybe once, or like mm-hmm. you thought one thing was interesting, so they show you like every single thing that might be similar. Yeah, the whole purpose is to make it quicker, but at the same time, you're kind of in this like feedback loop that everyone starts going into.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
It's honestly, like, it's scary to me. Like, on my Explore page, it'll just be, like, this the same exact kind of girl doing the same exact kind of pose and the same exact kind of pose over and over. And it feels, like, robotic, and, like, it feels like it, like, lacks humanity almost.
Just like a simulation of people.
Yeah, it feels weird to me, which is why, like, we try to stay far away from that.
We just try to do our own thing, even if it's a little weird or whatever.
Yeah, even if people roast us in the comment section.
Worth it.
You guys are the trendsetters. You're the one who kind of starts the things, and then everyone copies from there.
Not intentionally, but yeah, I mean, there has been effects of that just from having a platform. That's nice to inspire people to like kind of just do their own thing, think outside the box.
So before you guys started Mango Street, you both worked together to shoot various projects like wedding and brand work. Was it difficult in the very beginning to merge your own styles together?
From my perspective, I don't think so. I think that Daniel and I, while we have like a lot of things that, you know, make us complementary, like we have different strengths, the one thing that we have in common is like we like pretty much all of the same things. Like there's a little bit of nuance, but like if I like a photographer, or if I like a director, or if I like a movie or a photo, like I know that he probably likes it too. And like you can see it in our work, like there's little nuances of differences between it, but for the most part, I think we're inspired by the same things, and we like the same things, and we shoot the same things.
Yeah, like a lot of times when we are shooting, we'll just pass the camera off and we'll take turns, and then I don't always remember. Everything's kind of a blur when you're having to like quickly do these videos and try to shoot photos and videos and video at the same time. So I'll have to ask, like, wait, did you shoot this photo or did I? Because we kind of like, we have a similar style in that way. I mean, and it has been years of shooting together.
Yeah.
But I think from the get-go, yeah, like Rachel said, there are things that set us apart a little bit. But for the most part, we're kind of like aligned. And I mean, Rachel's more of like a looks forward into like, I don't know. She kind of just go with, she kind of takes the lead with inspiration. And I just kind of go with it.
I'll just say one other thing. Usually the only way to tell the difference between who shot which photo is which one is from like a taller perspective.
I got a few inches on either.
Yeah. I was just going to ask too, like, do you guys like both shoot, or like when you guys go shoot something, like you both have cameras, or is it like one person executing the shot and then the other kind of directs?
It kind of all depends. Like since we've done the YouTube channel, that's been like when we go take photos, it's usually for video, which it's not always ideal, but that's part of the job. And so earlier on, we'd have to, one person would shoot video and then one person would take photos, and then we'd switch, the other person would shoot video and the other person would take photos. And then as we've grown, we've been able to like hire people to shoot video for us, so that way we can just mm-hmm. both kind of take photos. Sometimes we'll bring a film camera along and some person can, one of us will take film photos, and then the other person will shoot digital. But usually it's kind of taking mm-hmm. turns, and like when someone's like inspired to be like, here, you shoot, you know.
Yeah, I think when we like go on like trips and stuff, it's usually just one camera mm-hmm. and then one person will enjoy the mm-hmm. scenery and one person will shoot and we'll switch.
Yeah, I think what we discovered was when we both had cameras in our hands, like, I don't know, it's kind of better just like let one person do their thing and take turns.
That's a good process, because then like, especially if you go on a trip, I hear like some of my friends are like tour photographers with musicians, and it seems glamorous that they're going to all these places and they always have a camera in their hands and they don't really get to experience like being in a different city versus like the last one.
Yeah, I did a very brief stint with a band shooting photos for like a week many years ago. And it was, it all kind of blurs together, and it was during February, and it was like in the kind of in the mm-hmm. Northeast. And it was just, I just remember being cold the whole time, and it's like a bunch of clubs, and it all just kind of blurred together.
So you guys started your debut on YouTube in 2017. And for me, that's kind of when I started learning like photography as well. And like anyone who starts something new, the first thing we go to is go on YouTube and search for like tutorials. Mm-hmm. And during that time, it seemed like long tutorials started to become the norm, but you guys kind of went the opposite way. And you guys describe yourselves as photography and videography tutorials that don't waste your time. So why did you guys decide to go the opposite directions with the styles of videos that you created?
I think there's two main reasons. And the first one is that we wanted to make tutorials that we actually would want to watch. Like we do the same thing. Like when we want to learn a new skill, like we go straight to YouTube to see what we can find. And people who are so long-winded and like taking forever to get to the point, and you're scrubbing through and then you miss the important part. Like, we didn't want to waste people's time. And so we just wanted the tutorials that we would want to watch.
The second reason is just to have like a differentiating factor of like, why should people bother to watch your videos if it's just the same as everyone else's? And so one of the ways we try to distinguish ourselves is just by keeping it very succinct. And it's mostly just to be like, here are some guidelines, here's something to get you going. Now you go out and shoot. Instead of spending like 5 hours on YouTube, it's like, here's 3 minutes. Now go out and shoot, because that's the only way you're going to get better, not by watching a bunch of videos. So it was just like, you know, here's some tips, now run with it. And we don't really have that camera charisma that some YouTubers have. Like, you know, I would never have thought this is what I'd be doing for a living, because we're not like big camera personalities. We're very low key.
We're behind the camera.
Like if we were talking like this in a YouTube video for like 20 minutes, it would be like super boring, I think. So one of the other ways, just like, we're just not entertaining enough. So we just got to keep it quick.
After you put that first video on YouTube, did you have any idea of how successful it would end up being today?
I mean, definitely not.
No, we hoped. Like, we went into it with the intention of growing the channel, but I mean, it grew right away and we didn't anticipate that.
I remember we finished our first video, uploaded it, and I'm like, I hope by the end of the week it has like 300 to 500 views, because that would give me like enough motivation. It took a lot of, we spent all weekend doing it, and I still was working like a full-time job, and I didn't want to spend a whole weekend doing something if no one was going to even watch it. So I was like, I just want like enough where it feels like validated in your efforts. And then I think the first video, I think within maybe 48 or 72 hours, it had 10,000 views, which was insane and just blew out our expectations. So then they're like, well, let's do it again next week.
I guess we do this now.
Yeah. So we did approach it like, we didn't start it just for fun. Like it was kind of a side hustle where we're like, hopefully it'll grow into something where maybe it'll cover some bills, or maybe it'll just be a little bit of just something on the side to do and make a little bit of money, a few hundred dollars here and there. But I don't know, 3 years later, and that's just what we do full time.
So you saw a lot of views after uploading that first video. And obviously there's a hit, there's a difference between having like a one hit wonder and making something that's truly sustainable. So where did you guys go from there in terms of maintaining that growth and in order to avoid just like staying stagnant?
Well, one of the main things was we knew we had to be consistent with our uploading schedule, because that's one of the main ways to grow an audience, is to like have them know when you post and then be consistent in the quality. And so I think once a week was like about as much as we could put out without, you know, burning ourselves out or running out of ideas.
Well, the other thing is, I think that we tried to find topics that weren't covered. Like on YouTube, there's all kinds of trends in every niche, but like in photography and filmmaking, it'll be like a filmmaker reacts to this, and then everybody makes a video like that.
Yeah.
We want to just do videos that everybody else was making. And so I think it helped us stand out more in the beginning, because it just covered topics that weren't being covered.
Yeah, we looked around before we started the channel. We were looking around and we're like, these people don't really shoot in our style, and these people talk too much to get to the point. And we're like, maybe we have something to bring to the table. Maybe we can show our own style and, you know, do videos in our own way. Because like Rachel mentioned earlier, when we want to learn something new, like I'm self-taught in a lot of things, and I learned a lot by just watching YouTube. But I also, like spending so many hours learning on YouTube, I realized what I like in a tutorial and what I don't like. And then we just try to make tutorials that we liked.
And then the other thing is, even if we like covered a topic that other people were covering, we would always try to at least have like one juicy tip that like nobody was talking about. Mm-hmm. Like we wanted to bring extra information that you couldn't get from another channel.
Yeah, like there's no point in doing another video on how to create a hyperlapse unless you can do it, add something to it, or do something that no one else has mentioned. Yeah. So yeah, that's always been our thing. It's like, well, we're not going to do it unless we can do it, add something, bring something to the table.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting about you guys is that you kind of took it in a kind of a business perspective. Like when you think of like business people, like first thing they do is kind of analyze like where the weaknesses are, where the gaps are, and where there's opportunity. And for you guys, I find it amazing that your strategy of growth is to kind of think about those things rather than the hyperlapse videos are trending, let me make another one to kind of tailgate that and try to add to that hype.
Yeah, it's tricky because there is like a game you have to play to a certain extent on YouTube if you want to have any sort of longevity. But you know, hopefully there's a way you can do it and still maintain your integrity, or at least do it your own way.
Yeah, we're always trying to find that balance.
Yeah, because sometimes you have to do a video that you know your audience will like, even if you personally don't like it.
About TikTok photography hacks.
Yeah, or like using some sort of technique that you think is maybe a little cheesy or a little whatever.
Twinkle lights.
Yeah, like, you know, you don't really want to shoot like that, but there's a ton of people that would like to know about that. And you know, you don't have to love everything you teach, and that's fine.
And funny that you guys mentioned TikTok photography. There was a time where even at Pexels, we were like, oh, like TikTok photography is going so big, maybe we should try to get in it. And then we kind of thought about it. It's like, but where do we fit? But it's like so interesting, the techniques that you can learn. Like I remember just scrolling through for fun, and then the next day doing a shoot, and I was like, whoa, like I actually learned something that I was just scrolling through last night.
Yeah, when we did the video on trying out these photography hacks, we're surprised that most of them I kind of wanted them to like all suck, just because I really like the TikTok photo world, but most of them were like, yeah, it kind of works, you know. Like it's good to get creative with what you have, and so I think that's you know, something we want to reinforce.
I'm not going to bring a colander on a wedding shoot.
No.
Yeah,
we're probably not going to do that, but you can see how, you know, hard light source with something with cool pattern can be interesting, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess the good thing about it is that it's becoming a lot more democratized. So like anybody can pick up a camera and like make a cool video, or pick up a camera and start trying these like really simple TikTok hacks that you don't need like a lot of money to start with.
Yeah. We've always wanted to not have an emphasis on gear, even though if you look at YouTube world, gear videos are huge. Like that's what some people specialize in, but one, that's like not our strong suit. That's not what we're passionate about. Every once in a while I get maybe excited about a piece of gear, but in general, not really. And so we've always just, when you focus too much on what you're shooting with, then people can be like, well, I don't have a $7,000 camera setup, so maybe I can't do what they do. And so that's why we try to like shoot a lot of stuff on phones and show that you can get great portraits from a cheap camera. And then that way people don't feel limited by what they have or don't have.
Yeah. And I think it's also great that you guys have such a dedicated community, and that's because of like your vulnerability and kind of just being who you are and not trying to just like follow trends and get lost in there.
Yeah. And sometimes that's to our detriment.
Definitely.
I don't know. You can, if you, you know, you don't want to focus too much on stats and things like that or view counts, but at the end of the day, I think if we have videos that we're like happy with, you know, sometimes you do a video, it's like the one for the meal, one for the reel or whatever. So sometimes you do a video that the audience likes, maybe you're not passionate about it, but, you know, maybe down the road, you get to do a really cool video that you always wanted to do. And you can because you have an audience supporting you.
I will say one thing about that is that's not a conscious choice that we make, like being genuine or being low key or like, that's our only option. Like we're not good actors.
Yeah, you would know.
We're not like super like bubbly, energetic people. So like, yeah, we're just doing it the only way we know how.
Yeah. If we just let our personalities like keep us from starting a YouTube channel, you know, just because we are so kind of low key and we don't see a lot of that on YouTube, then we'd be like, well, I guess we shouldn't do a YouTube channel because we're not able to be so bubbly and things like that. So it's just kind of one of those things we leaned into, I guess.
Yeah. The only thing that we like hold back on is like, I feel like we're not as weird as we actually are in real life, but we're as toned up as possible.
Yeah. This is about as excited as I get.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's great because it like resonates with a lot of photographers or videographers who are a lot more introverted and think that they have to kind of have this like persona or something in order to be on camera. So
yeah, a lot of people become photographers because they'd rather be behind the camera. Exactly. That was definitely the case with, I think, both of us. If you can stomach getting in front of the camera and, you know, providing value or something, then go for it.
Especially since post-production is a thing. My thing was always if I do something, it's like, oh, I'll just fix it in post.
Yeah, I kind of get like that too because I don't, like production stresses me out. I always just want to be done and just have it all on a memory card and I can just sit in front of the computer and work, you know, kind of isolated. I get cranky on production days because it's like not my natural habitat. So I'm like, I'm like stressed out about everything. Yeah, I kind of just want to get to a computer because that's like that's where I feel comfortable.
So was there a certain point where you guys decided that you could kind of take this online YouTube world full time?
Yeah. I mean, it did happen pretty quickly because the channel grew really fast and like our approach about it was always growing it as a business. So a story we always mention is when we were starting out and you get all these sponsorship inquiries, you get one from one website building company and we thought, well, we don't use that website building company. We do use Squarespace, like, and they sponsor everybody. So we'll wait until they hit us up. And eventually they did. And then they became like a long-term sponsor. And so then it works well because it's a genuine, like we just paid our Squarespace bill the other day. Like we still have Squarespace sites that we actually pay for. And so like growing the business that way where it's like, we're kind of just being genuine with our like sponsor spots and things like that. That's like helped the business grow. And so I think we started in January of 2017. And I think around summer, we could have gone full time probably. I mean, it took a while to start growing the revenue sources from it. But, you know, probably around that point was a time where a lot of people might have taken it full time. I was still doing a full time job that I really liked. It was a cool job. I was doing motion graphics and the company was really cool. So I was like, I'm just going to stay here for a little bit longer. And then, yeah, like at the end of October, beginning of November was when I quit. And then Rachel kind of put a hold on booking more weddings and we just kind of focused on that. So we're going into, what is this, our third year then? I guess it's 3 years of doing it full time.
Yeah. Yeah. We still did a couple weddings.
Yeah.
You've done like little jobs here and there.
Every once in a while, I'll do something fun. A freelance gig, but yeah, now it's just all YouTube stuff all the time. And it's just keeps us busy.
Yeah. And I mean, it takes up our, like, we have to keep our calendar clear because all the brand deals, all the things that we have to do, they come up so last minute.
Usually all around the same seasonal time, like November, December is a huge time of year for YouTubers. Like that's when you get a lot of the bulk of your revenue. And so that's like a pretty busy time of year. Yeah. I mean, it's just something that we've always just, I mean, we never thought it was going to be like that, but the way it's grown, it just made sense to. And I think if you come from like a freelance creative world, the benefit is there's like little to no clients like to please. It's mostly just you know, you have to please your audience, of course, and you want to be fulfilled with your own work you're putting out. And then every once in a while, if you do like a sponsored video or something, you need the brand to sign off. But for the most part, you just kind of get to do whatever you feel like. And that's the best part.
You choose what clients you work with. Like, you choose what gigs you accept.
Yeah.
And like, and kind of like, you agree with the client on what, you know, your end of the deal looks like. Like, you don't have, there's no middleman making you do things that you don't want to do.
Yeah. Like, when I was a video editor, and, you know, you get revision after revision after revision, and especially if they're not in the creative world and they're just like a corporate entity or whatever, you're just like rolling your eyes and being like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to do these revisions. And that's like, revisions are always the worst part of any kind of freelance creative project, I think anyone can attest to. And so I think that's kind of one of the things, like, it's the YouTube job's not the perfect job, but it is a good job in that you don't often have a client to answer to.
Yeah. And when you do, if it's not a great fit, then you just don't work with that client anymore. It's not
a, it's not a big deal. You're just like, oh, well, they were a pain to work with, so probably won't work with them again.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys hear this a lot, but your Squarespace ads are so cool. Like, I feel like whenever I watch a video, I'm like, oh no, I need to skip whatever ad that they have. But with you guys, it's like, I kind of look forward to that ad because it's like always something different.
We have fun with it.
Yeah, like, we appreciate that.
It kind of goes with what I was saying before about like our personalities. Like, we don't really just want to like sell to people. Like, if we're going to make people watch an ad, like, we want to entertain them.
Yeah. I think Rachel always comes up with these crazy ideas. She's like, next time we have to do Squarespace spot, here's what we're going to do. Yeah. We're going to do like a fake
wedding.
We're going to
build an entire Wheel of Fortune set.
All right. She always has crazy ideas, and I have to like scale her back. I'm like, that is way too much. Like, take it easy. But yeah, we just try to have fun with it. And we know, like, if we can go all out on one spot and it's like entertaining enough, we can use it for 6 to 12 months. And that's just a lot easier than trying to like do a genuine pitch for something every month or whatever to camera, feeling like a salesman. So now we're just like, well, let's just make it entertaining. If people want to fast forward, they can, not a big deal. But, you know, we have to do it in order to sustain ourselves. And hopefully they know that, and that the content's free. And maybe it just takes a little bit of your time watching an unskippable ad, or maybe a skippable integrated ad. But it's just part of the deal.
Yeah,
it's funny. My boyfriend actually asked me the other day, they're like, did they actually do a Squarespace ad at their wedding? And I was like, I don't know.
Honestly, we fooled my mom. Like, she knew that we were going to elope at some point. And then my sister just showed us that the video, and she didn't even hear the words at first. She was just like, what? Did they really get married? And then she heard the vows getting more ridiculous with Squarespace plugs, and she figured that it was just an ad, but it did trick her at first.
Yeah. In our actual wedding video, we posted it on our YouTube channel, and a bunch of the comments in there was like, is this a Squarespace ad? Like,
it was our real wedding video.
It's like, where's the Squarespace ad in this?
Yeah.
We won't stoop that low.
So something I've learned throughout your videos and other interviews that you've done is that you guys are huge fans of prime lenses. And logistically, it might seem kind of counterintuitive to use multiple lenses or multiple prime lenses rather than kind of bringing like a 24-70 and a 70-200 and kind of having all of your bases covered. Why did you guys make, or like, I guess it was a personal preference. Like, why do you guys personally prefer to shoot on prime lenses versus?
I bought like three zooms, I think.
16-35, 24-70, 70-200.
Yeah, my thought process behind that was I want to cover every possible like focal length.
Yeah.
And I think that
That's fine.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just starting out would maybe do the same thing. But what I found was that, first of all, I didn't need all those focal lengths. And I just loved 35 and 50 and 85 for weddings. Those were the only three that I needed. And I found that instead of like zooming to 35 or
to fix your composition.
To fix the composition, if you use a prime lens and you get up close, you can actually feel that in the photo. And I'm more of like the creative side of this, not the technical side of this. So I don't know if I'm just saying something dumb right now. But for me, when I take a photo with a 35 millimeter lens and I get up close to the couple and they're like in an intimate moment and I'm, you know, like right there with the camera, you can feel that in the image. But if I'm farther back and I zoom to 35, it feels farther away. It doesn't feel like as close of a moment. So for me, like actually like putting on a lens that makes me move closer to the subject makes the photos feel more.
And I think it's important when you're starting out to know what makes a photo feel a certain way. And, you know, just because you have your subject maybe similarly framed and you did it by zooming to, you know, 70 instead of walking in with a 35, they're going to have completely different feels. And, you know, if you can take out one variable from shooting when you're starting out, then you can just kind of focus on other things. So if you restrict yourself with the lens and, you know, you can focus on learning how to quickly set your ISO aperture and shutter speed. And it's instead of having another element that you also have to adjust. And, you know, that's something I think that maybe it takes time. And then maybe you find that you like zooms better, and that's whatever. It's whatever you like, whatever fits your style. But it's
definitely a taste preference for me.
But I just think, like, when you're starting out, if you know, if you can just eliminate one of those things that you're going to try to do to fix your photo or to get the shot, I think it kind of helps you grow.
Yeah, just getting in the habit of moving your feet instead of moving your lens makes you a better photographer, I think.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then once you have that, once you understand how focal lengths feel different and do different things with your background and your subject, then you can make a decision for yourself on what you prefer.
Yeah, we made a video about it, prime versus zooms, but it has it's controversial.
There's a lot of reactions there.
Yeah.
I think it's like a paradox of choice too. Like, if you have all these options from like 16 to 200, it's good, especially for beginners, I guess. Like, it's hard to narrow down what should I be doing in the situation, even if it's unconscious. Whereas if you kind of narrow it down to one, like all I have is a 50, then you have no other option, which is kind of forcing it in a certain way. But
yeah, the 50 was Rachel's first lens, and that was her only lens for a while. And you get to know the 50 really well, and then you realize what you don't like about it, or what you want from another. Why are you being held back with the 50? And then you figured out what lens to get next. You don't necessarily need to. I don't know. I think it just helps you. And then when we're shooting weddings, we have like three lenses with us, maybe a fourth just as like a just in case. But it's just like, hey, Rachel has a 35. I'll have 85, or maybe I'll have 24, depending. And then it's just like, you just know what you want for the situation at that point. So it's simpler.
It's kind of the opposite of being over prepared. Like, especially when packing or something, you think like, I need to be prepared for every single situation. But yeah, and then it overwhelms you when you like don't know what to use. But like, yeah, like you kind of are forced to use whatever you have.
Yeah, and then you kind of like adopt a certain style. Like, so if I shoot 35s a lot for weddings, like that feels a lot different than people who shoot like a lot tighter. So if people are looking for like my style, like having that 35, I don't know, contributes to that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah. Just like how we shoot portraits, most of our portraits are wide angle. We rarely use a 50, almost never use a 50 for portraits, and sometimes use an 85, but like some people would never consider using wide angle lenses like we do for portraits, but that's what we want. That's our style. Like,
yeah,
we don't want
to contributes to the feel of it.
We don't want
to
do like glamour beauty portrait, like headshot type stuff. And that's not our thing. And if it was, we probably wouldn't use such a wide angle, but that's part of our style.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of beginner photographers, when they first start, one of the first questions they ask themselves is, what's my style? And it's kind of hard to pinpoint that in the beginning. And I think it's great what you guys said of like kind of starting with what you have and then narrowing it down and then kind of figuring out what you need from there rather than just like starting with everything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to do it. And just like shooting a bunch of different types of things, and you realize what you're passionate about, what you're good at, and what resonates with you. And then, yeah, when people ask how do they define their style, I think it's just shooting as many different types of photography as possible, and then figuring out what you like and then focusing on that.
Yeah, or reverse engineering photos, like, and figuring out, like, throw all the photos that you like into one place and figuring out, like, what is it that I like about these
What's
photos?
A common denominator?
Yeah.
And then, like, what can you do to get there?
Yeah.
You guys spoke about how constraints help you become a more efficient creator on Matt Davella's podcast. Mm-hmm. So for us creative folks, we've been hit by one big limitation this year, which is this pandemic. And obviously that's affected a lot of different industries. How has this affected you guys? And how did you guys have to shift your strategies during this time?
Well, for first, I think we've been really fortunate where, you know, a lot of people have been out of work completely, really hard times financially, health-wise, things like that. So we've been very fortunate from that standpoint where we've been okay.
Yeah, we can't complain.
Yeah, it's hard to complain because things are, you know, things are fine. It's way worse for many other people. So with that, I mean, with that being said, it's just other than like,
we had to cancel a bunch of travel.
Like boohoo, whatever, it's fine. Yeah,
we can't work with, like for the last couple of years, we've been working with models a lot. We've been doing like mostly photo shoots. And like one thing that's helped us be able to focus on photo shoots is having somebody shoot the video for us while we do photo. And so obviously we can't do either of those things now. So we've been shooting each other. It's like kind of like how we started out. Like when we started doing this channel, we didn't have access to any models. We didn't have anybody to shoot video for us. We were doing everything ourselves. One person would shoot, one person would film, we're editing it together. And like, we've just kind of had to revert back to that a little bit.
Yeah. It's just been, so the beginning, like in the spring and summer, we were like doing as many kind of creative photo shoots as we could in our apartment. And I mean, those videos did well. People, I think, resonated with that because a lot of people were at home. And then, I think now we've focused on some more, like, we never really covered Photoshop stuff before that much. And so now we've kind of leaned into some more editing type videos.
Yeah, things you can do from your computer.
Yeah. But yeah, it's still it is a little harder to think of, you know,
to keep coming up with a new thing.
Yeah.
That doesn't require us to leave.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause we don't, like, I don't leave the apartment ever.
Yeah, we're here, like, you know, I go out maybe once a week for some errands or something, and then maybe walk the dogs. But like, yeah, we pretty much don't leave. So, you know, we're a little handcuffed a little bit in that sense where it's like, normally when you try to think of video ideas, you're not really restricted by, you know, this kind of situation. And you can just, you could be like, well, let's do shoot with two models and they're both wearing X, Y, Z and we'll shoot with this kind of gear and it'll be really fun. And now it's more like, well, I don't know. What can we do?
Like in our living room.
Yeah.
In these 45 feet.
It's been a challenge, but I mean, you know, we're fine.
Yeah. We're definitely, we're ready for that because of how we started out, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's really cool to see like everything that's come out of it. Even like, you think like, oh, if you're strapped to one place, it'll be hard to kind of think of these ideas. But, even all over the internet, people are like getting really creative with like what they can do at home.
Yeah. That's been really fun to see. And if like, that's why I think we've done like those challenges. Like we even had like, you know, some other photographers challenge us to do something. And those are kind of fun because what, you know, like we've always said, the constraints kind of force you to be creative, but it gives you something, it gives you some sort of structure to work within. And so when someone's like, okay, shoot a portrait in tungsten light, then you're like, okay, first of all, it removes a lot of different possibilities. So then you're like, okay, how can I get the best results?
Yeah, the most creative shot with tungsten light. Yeah, I agree totally. Usually like if it's too broad, it's like, it's too hard to get.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't even know where to start.
Yeah. So like we've always found that putting some kind of limitation, like we've done videos in the past, like before the pandemic, where it's just like, we would challenge each other with like certain limitations. Like, okay, take a photo where your back is touching the ground.
And it maybe sounds gimmicky, but I think it's like a good exercise to
so your brain gets into this mode of like, it's like autopilot. Like, okay, I go out and shoot, like I'm just gonna go out and shoot the same things. But if you do another thing where you're if you add something to it, some sort of constraint, like I said, like, okay, you have to take a photo, but you have to do it from like while you're laying on the ground. Like your brain like has to get over that autopilot and then figure out, okay, how am I going to do this? And then that's what stretches your creativity.
It's one of those things I think photographers might feel pressure when, especially if you're working with like a professional model, that they're expected to always know like, okay, what to do next, and never feel like they're taking time to like think about things. And because then they feel like they don't know what they're doing. And, you know, you have to project this confidence. But this is like a good exercise to be like, okay, these are my constraints. Let's figure out how to work within them.
Yeah, I do remember your video on like constraints and like when you guys challenge each other to do photos in a certain way. And I think that like that's such a good way to practice because even in school, whatever you study, you have all these like practice questions, these like practice scenarios that they put you in, but you think that's theoretical, that's school, but you can also take that and do it in real life. So yeah, like you said, Rachel, your mind kind of is forced to think of different ways to do things.
And it forces you out of your comfort zone a little bit. Like maybe the challenge is to shoot with the lens you don't like or doing something else. But then it gives you that experience of working with whatever it is you normally wouldn't. And then, you never know how that's going to help you in the future.
Was there a challenge that you guys did that you were really surprised of the result about?
Well, the stand-up challenge, I did mention the tungsten light. I really like that. Usually we're like, let's use window light, like nice daylight. And usually we turn off all the tungsten lights. But honestly, I love like when tungsten lights use well, it's really cool. And so that was kind of a fun challenge. What else?
Well, we'd seen the newspaper shoot just everywhere. And then we did one of those. And so it was like,
where people put newspaper all on their walls as a backdrop.
Yeah. And so it was like really hard to try to think of like, what can we do that we haven't seen before? And we got two images out of it that I really like that I hadn't seen before, but now I see them all the time. At that point.
Yeah. So being at home, you guys had only had each other and kind of had to use each other as subjects. How did you kind of get comfortable doing that? Because I think a lot of photographers, like they're comfortable behind the camera, but once it comes to being in front of it, we don't know what to do.
Well, that's something we still struggle with. Like, I think whenever we are just shooting each other, that's when we're most likely to get like kind of frustrated, because you get frustrated with yourself because you're not a model and you're like, oh, I look so stupid here. Like, I hate how I look. I don't know how to make myself look better.
My face is so dumb.
I don't know how to look like a model. So, I mean, we did a video where we had like two models that we work with kind of like coach us and be like, teach us how to model, which was like kind of helpful because they give you a little bit of like insight of like thinking about being a character, thinking of a thought that'll like kind of emote through your face, you know, something like that. That's kind of helped us. But in general, that is a huge pain point.
We still struggle with it. We just did a photo shoot 2 days ago where we only had each other to shoot. And you kind of have these like big, I don't know, grandiose and ideas of what the photos are going to look like. And then you're looking at the back of the camera, you're like, why does my face keep doing that? I don't understand.
Yeah.
We definitely still struggle with it. But one of my tips is my face that's the dumbest. So hiding my face, like in this particular photo shoot, we put a box on Daniel's head, put a sheet over my head. My hair always ends up over my face. We have little workarounds.
That's something if you have hard, if you or your friends have a hard time modeling, we're like, I don't know, put some sunglasses on. I'm like, a lot of times it's through the eyes where like you really can tell that they're like not a model. Mm-hmm. And that's what one of the things that makes models worth their weight in gold really is when it's just like their eyes and kind of knowing how their body, their shape, how to, pose, their angles, everything like that. If you can creatively cover your face, go for it.
Yeah, do what you have to.
It's hard though. Like that's 100% what the hardest part probably.
Yeah.
I remember watching videos when they're like, just move your arms or like do something like movement wise. And it's like so much harder than it seems. And as a photographer, it seems so easy to be able to like say these commands to the model, but it really like allows you to empathize with them, especially those who aren't models when you go on the other side.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're doing wedding photography kind of made us a little bit better at working with
normal, like just regular people.
Yeah, normies.
Yeah, people who are models. Yeah, when you shoot stuff like engagements or weddings, you start to learn how to
direct people.
Yeah.
Kind of get what.
Help get the best out of just regular people who aren't used to getting their photo taken.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So congratulations for starting your own YouTube channels recently. That's super exciting.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
That was kind of crazy of us, I think.
Yeah. So Daniel, your channel focuses more on how to make money online. And Rachel, your channel focuses on personal fitness. Just out of curiosity, did anyone end up getting a tattoo for winning your challenge?
No.
We haven't actually like looked at the face of a stranger in 8 months or whatever. So we're no tattoos anytime soon.
Rachel got a Larry Bird thrift shop sweatshirt instead of a tattoo.
To hold me over, I have a
Larry Plus, Bird I don't shirt. Want her to have a Larry Bird tattoo. That guy is not the prettiest face to look at on my wife's body all the time. So it was her idea too. I don't know why she said that.
I was too confident, too cocky.
Yeah.
Where did you guys first get started the idea of having these like two channels that were very different from Mango Street and also very different from each other in addition to kind of growing your existing channel?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's interesting right now. If you looked at our business, 6 months ago, it's just photography, filmmaking tutorials, it's Mango Street. And it's a little scary having all your eggs in one basket, kind of, yeah. especially when you're relying on a third-party platform to distribute your content. So if you're relying on YouTube to show your stuff to your audience, and then maybe YouTube stops recommending it as much, or maybe people aren't engaging with it as often, then you're like, well, that's like not just like a stat. Mm-hmm. It's like my livelihood, you know?
Yeah. And we're married. Like that's both, like if it takes a hit, mm-hmm. then we both yeah. take a hit.
Yeah. And so, and also it's like, you know, it's been a lot of weeks in a row of making photography video, you know, videography videos.
We have other passions.
Yeah. We have other passions, and it's just, you can get burnt out really easily. And so even if it's mm-hmm. still on YouTube, just talking about something other than photography is really nice. Like I've really enjoyed doing my videos because it's about making money online, like you mentioned. And that's something that ever since I was a kid, like I've always found so fascinating. And it's always something I've attempted and mostly failed at doing. And so I thought it'd be fun to do a channel where it's like, I don't need to make a living off this channel. So, you know, I don't need to be as, maybe if you look at other channels in that niche, they're selling a course on making print-on-demand t-shirts or drop shipping. And then you're just like, well, you're heavily biased because you just want to sell courses. So I was like, if I can make a channel in that realm and then not have anything to sell, so it's just like, I don't know, I'm just trying things out. And I thought that'd be really interesting and kind of fun because it's like stuff that I have wanted to try out anyway. So, you know, if it's starting a print-on-demand t-shirt company, you know, I wanted to try that out and just be honest and transparent with how the process was and whether or not I actually can make money from it. And plus, you know, like a lot of people mm-hmm. might be out of work or cut back on hours, and or if you're freelance, maybe you're looking for other ways to grow your business or make money to pay your bills. And I was like, well, you know, if I can cover mm-hmm. some topics that can help people, you know, take more control over their finances, because that's something that's not really taught well in the school system, totally. At least where I grew up. And as you know, I always thought that was one of the most important topics, because you should have control of your finances, and that way you can hopefully have a better life or a life that you want. That was kind of like the goal of my channel, I think.
Yeah, well, he had that idea like way before the pandemic, but then mm-hmm. after the pandemic hit, I think we were like, okay, now's mm-hmm. the time to do it. Like now's the time, where, like especially like he was doing a bunch of stock stuff, and I'm like, people probably like want to, like it's so overwhelming, especially mm-hmm. like I don't understand it as much as Daniel does, and I'm like, you should explain this to people, like you should start your channel now. And so like that had a lot to do with the timing of it, I think.
Yeah, but it's hard though, because I was already like mm-hmm. very busy just with like Mango Street, and now it's like at least twice the work, if not I don't know what I was thinking, but it makes for a very busy schedule.
And yeah, then, well, I mean, we're not going anywhere. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's easier when you don't travel and just kind of stay put and can develop a routine. But yeah, then you started your fitness channel.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just something that I'm passionate about. And
she works out all the time, and she really loves working out.
Yeah. And I, like, when we started channel, like, we kind of talked about this earlier, but we wouldn't want to start one that's just like everybody else. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to have, like, a certain niche. And so I was watching a lot of fitness channels, and I was thinking, like, I can make one that's like maybe like a little bit more aesthetically pleasing. But maybe like one of the things that I really wanted to do was incorporate like kind of like meditation into the stretch breaks. Like, so during the stretch breaks, I'll mm-hmm. take people to Iceland or like show.
Yeah, really cool visuals.
Yeah. It's like, so I wanted to make videos that like make people's brains mm-hmm. and bodies feel good. And I was like, I'm not seeing that. So like maybe I can be different in that way. But since making the channel, I would say like the one thing, that makes it a lot different than Mango Street is on Mango Street, like even though there's a technical side to it, a lot of the stuff that we do on mm-hmm. Mango Street is like art based. And so it opens you up to be very vulnerable to people all over the world. And so we get a lot of comments that are like, I don't know, some just like kind of mean in a way that.
Well, you wouldn't care so much if it wasn't making you vulnerable or
yeah,
like.
Yeah, it's
you
attacking you in like a deep place. Like when they call your art bad, like that hurts. And so
was
like
this motel art.
Yeah. So like it's refreshing to make videos that
can't be judged in that way.
That can't be judged in that way. Like people can judge them in other ways, but it doesn't hurt you deeply. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But also like kind of like Daniel's, but in a different way, I feel like they're helping people. Like my mom in particular is a person who like has to go to the gym, but like she has a compromised immune system. So I'm like mm-hmm. excited to make videos that she can do at home and like other people like that. And so it just was a good time to do these like home workout videos too.
Yeah, I would also agree with that. The comments just roll off your back more when it's like not a creative endeavor. Like if someone wants to call me stupid for anything, money or whatever, I don't care. Like I'm fine with my decisions, and you know, it's not me trying to make art. So.
Yeah, but when they drag your short film, you're like, but that was my heart.
Yeah, I was going to ask if it was like intentional whether you guys picked these topics, because it's like so fitting for the times. Like most people right now make extra money on the side, or especially people who didn't even work out before. Now, like it's great for people's mental health and like helping them in that way.
Yeah.
It's more coincidental, I think, because like, I mean, Rachel was already working out like all the time anyways, like always exercising. I, you know, like I said, I was always passionate about like finding ways to make money. I was already like waking up early and trading stock options and things like that. And so kind of both these things were just,
We definitely were doing them and definitely were interested in them before. But I think the pandemic was an impetus to be like, okay, now's the time where it's like really relevant. Like maybe we should start these now. Like let's just make time and do it now.
Yeah. And I mean, it helps that it's things we're interested in. We already know how to make YouTube videos and we have all the gear. So it's like, there's very, very little barriers to entry now for us to try different projects that we also find interesting.
It takes a little bit of the pressure off, because I'm sure you guys are used to like deadlines and putting out things every single week and whatnot. And although obviously you still have to kind of try and be consistent with your own endeavors, it's like more doing what you love rather like aside from what you're already doing.
Yeah, I think that's true. And so, you know, every once in a while, if we're like, you know what, let's not do a Mango Street video this week, you know, and
we did that once already.
Yeah, we just recently, and I think we're both okay with it, because, you know, we're just people too. If you watch like a TV show, they take long breaks between seasons. Like you're a YouTuber, you don't have seasons. You just sort of feel like you're forced to always put out videos nonstop, and that kind of gets to you after a while. So I think it is nice to have something else to kind of alleviate that a little bit and be okay with, you know, taking a break every once in a while from Mango Street or whatever else.
Absolutely. Rachel, I was actually just going to start trying your 30-day challenge too. The gyms in Toronto keep like opening and closing because of like everything going on. So I've always wanted to try one of those like YouTube challenges, but never really had time or dedication to go through with them.
They're good workouts. They work up a really good sweat. I mean, Rachel does them all. She does her own workouts all the time. I mean, I did them for a long time.
Yeah, I do. My dogs get really confused because they'll look at the TV and they'll look at me like this.
And they see themselves on your videos too.
Yeah, I always find it crazy how fitness like instructors can like, I'm over there doing it and like feeling like, oh my God, I'm like gonna die. But then the instructor here is like talking and still going and like looking good while doing it. So that's really difficult.
Yeah, I don't look good the whole time.
Yeah, you do.
For sure. No. If you watch the other videos, like they say like very put together. I sweat a lot. My hair gets, I kind of like that aspect too. Like if I mess up in the workouts, I like leave it in because I feel like, people maybe would relate to that or like feel better. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want my videos to ever like make people feel, but like I want them to just make people feel good. So
it's accessible. Yeah. Everyone messes up when they're doing a workout.
Yeah. Like no one's perfect. The steak stays in, the sweat stays in, the hair stays sloppy. Like it's just, that's how I want it to be.
Yeah. I think that's the good thing about this, everything going on right now is people start becoming more vulnerable. Like even with offices, you have like, I don't know, like the CEO of McDonald's is like in his living room doing Zoom calls with his kids running around. And it just kind of brings more vulnerability to everybody. And everyone's just all the same.
Yeah, I really like that.
So just wrapping up, are there any upcoming projects that you guys are working on and excited about?
Well, we just did a shoot out in the dunes 2 days ago. That was a fun shoot. And I mean, that's coming out in like 2 weeks. So that wasn't like a huge project or anything, but it was something we had been planning for a long time. And then there's like massive heat wave in California. And then we're supposed to shoot it on Sunday when it was nice and normal temperature outside. And then we had to push the shoot one day and then the heat wave started up again. So it was a really hot shoot, but it was pretty fun. And then
we have like a few courses with other platforms coming out. So we just did one with Skillshare and that will be out in October.
On the 20th,
Oh, it is October right now.
Yeah, really soon.
Wow.
A lot of our bigger projects, you know, if we look at the past few years, usually involve like some sort of trip and then some sort of big shoot. And so obviously we're not doing that anymore. So now we're just kind of yeah, we're just kind of taking it week by week, really. We don't have anything super, anything super crazy on the horizon.
Well, after this Skillshare class drops, we'll have two other courses probably coming up in the future. And then, yeah, I don't know, just our weekly.
Just playing it by ear.
Yeah, our weekly videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, Skillshare course would be so cool. Like, we always see them like with like business and like, I don't know, like economics and everything. But I'm excited to see what you guys are doing with your course.
We just flesh it. It's fun. I think it's fun.
I think if you like our tutorials and like our style of our approach, it's just like a really expanded upon Mango Street video. But like,
what's it called?
It's like creative product photography.
Yeah.
So it's more about the creativity behind product photography and less about use this lens with this kind of light.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Rachel and Daniel, for chatting today. It was so great to be able to hear about the behind the scenes of Mango Street and how you guys got to where you are.
Thanks so much for having us. Yeah, it was fun chatting. Yeah.